Everyone experiences loss. I mean, it's just part of being human, right?
Absolutely. It touches everyone.
But what if I told you it's way more than just feeling sad, that it's actually this deep biological thing, something that physically changes your brain and body?
That's exactly what we're diving into today, the biochemistry of loss.
Okay.
Our mission here is really to unpack how grief isn't some abstract concept, but a real, tangible neurological event. We want to look at the science. You know, why does it feel so overwhelming? What's happening physically?
And what happens when things go wrong? When healing gets stuck?
Precisely. We're pulling together insights from neuroscience, psychology, biology, trying to give you that full picture.
And some of the science is genuinely surprising. Like the idea of your brain getting stuck in a prediction error.
Yeah. Or think about this, a key brain chemical, dopamine, potentially dropping by as much as 40%.
40%. Wow. Okay, let's get into that. Where does grief even happen in the brain? Is it just the sad part lighting up?
Well, that's what's so interesting based on modern brain imaging. It's not just one sadness center. It's really a whole brain experience. You see activity across wide networks.
Yeah.
Areas dealing with emotion, memory, even your sense of self.
So it's less like one light switching on and more like the whole electrical grid surging.
Yeah.
Affecting different systems.
Exactly. And altering function. So, for instance, in that initial acute phase of grief, your brain's alarm system, the amygdala, goes into overdrive.
Okay, so lots of fear, distress.
Right. But at the same time, the part responsible for rational thought, your prefrontal cortex, actually becomes less active, quieter.
Which probably explains that brain fog people talk about, the trouble concentrating.
That's a big part of it, yeah, that functional imbalance. And it connects to that prediction error idea we mentioned.
Right, the prediction error. Tell me more about that.
Well, think about attachment. Your brain builds this incredibly strong model, this prediction that says this person is fundamental, they're here. Loss just shatters that model.
It creates a massive conflict.
A profound conflict. And that intense yearning, the searching behavior you often see, that's your brain desperately trying to confirm its old prediction, trying to find something that, well, that isn't there anymore.
And that yearning, it connects to the brain's reward system too, doesn't it? That seems almost cruel.
It is a cruel paradox, especially in complicated grief. Reminders of the person can actually activate the brain's reward hub, the nucleus accumbens.
Creating that intense craving.
Yeah.
Almost like addiction.
Neurochemically, there are similarities. That powerful yearning sensation, it's complex.
And this isn't just about temporary brain function, right? It can cause actual structural changes if grief goes on too long.
Yes, exactly. Chronic stress, like from prolonged grief, means sustained high levels of cortisol, the stress hormone.
Right.
And that cortisol can actually cause the hippocampus, which is vital for learning and memory, to physically shrink over time.
Which makes it harder to form new memories, harder to adapt, harder to learn your way out of the grief.
Precisely. It impairs the very learning process needed to update that internal model.
Okay, let's talk chemistry then. The neurotransmitters, you mentioned dopamine.
Yeah, dopamine. Crucial for reward, motivation, feeling pleasure. Grief can cause a major drop. Some estimates suggest, like we said, as much as 40%.
40%. No wonder people feel apathy, fatigue, that inability to enjoy things.
Absolutely. And then there's serotonin, key for mood regulation. That often drops too, maybe around 30%.
Which fuels the sadness, yeah. The mood swings.
Right. And this chemical shift can also weaken the connection between the emotional centers, like the amygdala, and the rational control from the prefrontal cortex makes regulating those intense emotions much harder.
And it's not just brain chemicals. The whole body stress response kicks in.
Oh, yeah. Your HPA axis fires up, flooding your system with cortisol. Initially, that's adaptive fight or flight.
But if it stays high?
That's the problem in prolonged grief. Cortisol can remain chronically elevated. We're talking maybe 60% above baseline, sometimes for months.
60%. Yeah. And that has knock-on effects.
Big time. Chronic cortisol promotes systemic inflammation throughout the body. That's one reason grief is linked to increased risks for things like heart disease.
And it messes with the immune system, too.
Ironically, yes. While promoting inflammation, it can also suppress other crucial immune cells, making you more vulnerable to infections. It's really a whole body event.
So, given all this, how does healing normally happen? And what is prolonged grief disorder, or PGD?
For most people, thankfully, the intensity of grief does lessen over time. The brain slowly adapts, learns, updates its model. But for about 7 to 10% of bereaved people, it doesn't. It gets stuck.
That's PGD.
Yes. That's when the intense yearning, the preoccupation with the person who died, persists for over a year, typically, and really gets in the way of daily life.
And it's different from just depression or PTSD.
It's distinct, yeah.
Yeah.
While it can co-occur with them, PGD is fundamentally seen as a disorder of attachment and that stalled learning process we talked about. The brain just can't upgate its map of the world. There might be genetic factors influencing vulnerability, too.
And the impact. I read something about the cost.
It's staggering. Just in the U.S., the estimated cost of lost productivity linked to unresolved grief is, well, it's huge. Over $225 billion a year, affecting something like 1 in 4 employees.
$225 billion. That's enormous.
Yeah.
Which really underlines why effective treatments are so critical.
Absolutely. And we have them. For PGD, the most effective first-line approach is actually a specific type of therapy, grief-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
Okay, CBT, how does that help?
It directly targets that stalled learning. It uses techniques to help the brain process the loss, integrate the reality, and adapt, essentially restarting the learning process.
It's interesting. What about medications, like antidepressants?
Well, research shows that standard antidepressants like SSRIs don't really move the needle much on the core symptoms of PGD itself compared to the focused CBT.
Really?
Yeah. They can be helpful if someone also has clinical depression or significant anxiety alongside the PGD, but they don't target that core attachment and learning issue in the same way.
Which really highlights that PGD isn't just, say, low serotonin. It's this deeper learning and adaptation problem.
Exactly. It underscores that grief is this systemic biological event, a huge learning challenge for your brain, impacting neurotransmitters, hormones, immunity, even changing brain structure over time.
Well, therapies like the grief-focused CBT are about facilitating that learning, not just symptom relief.
That's the core idea, restarting that essential adaptation.
You know, understanding all this biology, it really can shift how you think about loss. Your own or someone else's. It's not just in your head, is it?
Not at all. It's profoundly embodied of a whole body experience.
Which leads to a final thought, maybe a provocative one.
Yep.
If we know the cost is immense, that $225 billion figure in the U.S., 1 in 4 employees affected.
Mm.
What does that tell us about our responsibility as a society?
Mm. Good question.
To support people who are grieving, not just with, you know, sympathy, but with real, practical, evidence-based care. And knowing this science, what steps could you, listening now, take, maybe in your own community, your workplace, to advocate for or even help build better support systems? Something to think about.